The brands we love most are those with big hearts, those who do what's right even when it's a difficult thing to do, those who help those around them even when it hurts the bottom line, and those who stand for something and drive change even in the face of adversity. These are the brands that make the world a better place to live, and their stories must be told. In this podcast, we share their stories in hope that others will be inspired to follow. Welcome to Brand Heart.
Hello, welcome to Brand Heart. I'm your host, Jeff Friedman, and today I'm here with Roddy Young, the Chief Marketing and Communication Officer at Boston Children's Hospital. Roddy, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jeff. Good to be here.
Thanks. Well, I've always been a fan of Boston Children's Hospital. It's, you know, one of the leading, it is probably the leading children's hospital in the country.
It is.
But Roddy, if you can tell our audience a little bit about Boston Children's Hospital, just to start off, that'd be great.
Sure. We have four pillars of what we do. Obviously, clinical care, clinical excellence. We're number one children's hospital by U.S. News and World Report in the country, if not the world. And tops in just about every discipline. And we also have the research pillar. We're the largest pediatric research enterprise in the country, again, if not the world. We have a community pillar and we have a teaching pillar. We're part of the Harvard Medical School. So each of those is critical to what we do. And then the last kind of an unwritten pillar of the foundation, we're also a philanthropy. We're fortunate that we have people around the country and across the globe who support us for each of those endeavors.
Great. Thanks, Roddy. Well, you know, it's obviously been an interesting year for pretty much all healthcare organizations. COVID has kind of changed everything. And so, but I'm curious, you know, oftentimes we hear about COVID and, you know, kids are okay. Don't worry, you know, the kids don't get it as much. It's safe. And, you know, we hear a lot about adults. But it must be affecting. We know it affects kids and it affects their parents and it affects their lives and their families. So talk about how COVID has affected Boston Children's Hospital.
Immensely and in so many ways, and probably for the reasons, if you think about it, your own family at that micro level, the same thing happens at the macro level. So beginning with COVID, obviously we're a healthcare organization and we had to protect our workers and our patients and families who came to see us. So regardless of whether or not our patients were getting sick at the same rate that adults were, the precautions were the same and the stressors were the same. And people who work for any company, at the beginning of COVID, everybody was stressed. How do I make sure that I'm safe, my colleagues are safe, my family is safe?
Right.
So it was a stressful time. We sent people home. All the administrative team went home. And the clinical care team stayed in and took care of people in need, but the volume shrank immensely. But as you said, you know, what about the impact on children? And this is something that I'm proud to be associated. We have some of the top researchers in the world who are looking at these issues. Dr. Adrian Randolph, Dr. Jane Newberger, these are people who are looking at the impact of COVID on children. One of the conditions is called MISC, multi-inflammatory syndrome for children. And they're just now producing the research. In fact, there's a JAMA article coming out imminently on that. These are multi-pronged studies and the investment and time, you know, it makes me proud to be associated with these people who are really looking at what happened, what is happening, so that we can hopefully not have the downstream effects should this happen again. And it's pretty certain that there'll be another pandemic at some point. We just, you know, it's hard to predict. But the other consequences were that as children are home, behavioral health was a problem before.
Right.
And now with COVID, it's almost as if it were a pressure cooker. And children and families, the behavioral health issues have really just taken off in a bad way. Our emergency department is filled with behavioral health patients. And how we deal with this, not just as a hospital, but as a community, as a state, as a country, is one of the things that Sandy Fenwick, who just retired at the end of March, and Dr. Kevin Churchwell, who just became our new CEO at the beginning of April, are trying to grapple with. It has so many downstream consequences. And that is, I think, the epidemic that is yet unanswered that we really need to tackle, not just Boston Children's, but all of healthcare and really all of American society and the world.
Right. You mean the behavioral health epidemic? Talk a little bit more about how COVID has impacted, like what type of behavioral health issues are you seeing?
So I'm not a clinician, so my depth here is thin, but from what I understand, the stressors of society have, people are home more, families are, you know, the escape valve for a child to maybe get counseling at a school is gone in the way that they used to, the interactions with other kids, they're at home all the time. Every type of behavioral health issues, whether it's eating disorders or dealing with bullying, they have seemed to have exacerbated with COVID and the you know, not being in a more open world. So it was bad before, and some of these issues I think are really highlighted with COVID. Well, it's hard to quantitate exactly. Are the numbers truly worse, or are they just exhibited more? But these are PhD level papers, so I don't want to go too deep and give you the answer because I'm completely unqualified.
Not a problem. But I mean, you mentioned a few: eating disorders, bullying. I mean, I imagine things like gaming addiction, even, right? I mean, you know, kids on their computers just addicted to games, or I don't know if there's a TV watching addiction, but at least all of that's that just the consumption is increasing so much.
That's right.
It can't be good.
That's right. Yeah. As you know, kids don't really watch TV anymore. It's online activity, all kinds of online activity, whether it's gaming, social media, consumption of YouTube. And yeah, that addiction or overconsumption can have, you know, some downstream effects, inability to interact, being stressed by the world. And this is something that you think about, if you could address it early on and understand it early on, perhaps some behavioral health issues that get exacerbated through the life of a human being becoming an adult, you would hopefully have healthier adults. And that's one of the core premises that we believe in at Boston Children's, treat children when they're young and, you know, produce healthier adults. And the downstream effects are obviously a lifetime of health and well-being versus chronic disease that sometimes behavioral health manifests itself in other ways, obesity, alcoholism, drug addiction, that are, you know, maybe started when they were a child. And if we were able to understand it, address it early, you would avoid those lifelong afflictions.
Yeah, it's a really good point. My daughter has a shirt that she often wears. In fact, she was wearing it yesterday. It says, "I am the future." And I think that that's kind of the reminder. It's like, let's take care of our kids because they are our future. And if we can catch those things and take care of them now, the future will be brighter for everyone. So
exactly. I'll give you one quote that Stanley Fenwick often says, children are 25% of our population, but 100% of our future. So you're
that's a great line.
Exactly right.
Yeah, that's great. So I wonder, I was also thinking about when I was thinking about jumping on the call with you, you know, you hear a lot about it's tough when, you know, people are having babies and their husband's not allowed or partner isn't able to be there with them, or they're at the hospital. I imagine for kids to be, and I don't know if it's still the case at Boston Children's Hospital or how you dealt with it earlier, COVID, but when a kid is getting treated at Boston Children's Hospital and COVID was preventing parents or others from going in there, was that something that happened there? And how is that? How did you work around that?
So in pediatric care, and it sounds almost like a television commercial, but in fact, it's true, the parents are part of the care team, and we could not practice in the same way that adult care could. It's not healthy for the child. So we did not have the same level of restrictions, did have restrictions, and we also had iPads interactions like the adults, but we didn't do 100% no visitor. That's just too difficult.
Okay. So how else has Boston Children's Hospital had to adapt or over the last year? I mean, imagine we talked earlier about technology, and it's not just technology of kids now at home, but even how children's hospitals or hospitals around the country and healthcare around the world is going to telemedicine. How have you adapted to things like that?
So the team at Boston Children's had a foundation of technology that was already there, but the adoption of the technology wasn't high. The number of telehealth visits, online visits, virtual visits prior to COVID was pretty low. The fortunate thing is because we had these systems, when it became a not an option, we were able to flick the switch and transition to virtual visits instantaneously. And we, the volume is, you know, in the thousands, and they remain in the thousands every day. People have online consultations with their physicians or nurses. So that is a huge change, and one that, you know, maybe won't be at the same volume that it was in, you know, May, June, July of last year. But it, I do believe it's not going away. And it's something that, you know, parents and families like, that option of having an early touch, and maybe you will come in later to the hospital or to see your clinician at a clinic. Right. But virtual visits is something I do believe that won't go away. The other thing is the obvious is the ability to get work done virtually. Right. There are some people who said it's, you know, that's just not going to work. I can't, if I don't see my employee, then, you know, they must not be doing anything. And clearly that's not the case. And in fact, you know, I would say that in our team, the volume of work has actually grown.
Yeah.
The production has grown, the quality has grown. And, you know, I worry about it in the sense that I don't want them working from 6 until 10 o'clock every night in a crisis mode. And that was what it was like at the beginning, trying to share things like, you know, what do I do about childcare? And are we put our experts out across the state to schools and to childcare facilities to show them, you know, here are some protocols to follow. Here are some things to consider. Right. Here are behavioral health things to note as you do childcare in this COVID environment. Every day during the beginning of COVID was, you know, effectively a crisis communications day.
Yeah, right.
So that's not sustainable. Hopefully, you know, we'll rest in a calmer place. But the ability to do work remotely is obviously a change for everybody, and it can work. But how do you come to a new resting place where you get some of that positive friction with your colleagues, but allow people that flexibility to work effectively almost wherever they want?
Yeah, I think that's a big, that was a big learning piece for every hospitals and everyone, right, alike. Can you work from home? And I think you're right in many ways, which is, has it actually, you know, people are always scared working home was going to decrease productivity. And all of a sudden it's like, well, we removed the commute time, we removed every barrier, and now it's, we removed the constant interruptions of people knocking on your cubicle or your office. And people are getting more work done, and I've thought about this as well. Are people now overworked, right? Instead of, you know, the opposite of what people thought was going to happen almost feels true, is that people are now overworked and putting almost too much time where it's, you know, going back to the issue with the kids, is it's turning into behavioral health issues or mental health issues. It's like, we're working all the time.
Exactly right. So if you discover the recipe of how to come to that new resting place, let me know.
Yeah. Well, I think we're all figuring it out as we think about how we integrate back to the workplace. And it'll be interesting to see how, you know, what work looks like in a year from now. And how, you know, will you be in the office every day, Roddy, in a year?
I doubt it. Part of me wants to practice what we're preaching, is that flexibility. So I want some positive friction of interaction and to have that socialization of colleagues.
Right.
But I don't think 5 days a week and the commute time, which is the downside of it, it's unproductive time. And then some days, you know, you need some time to think, some processing time. Right. And then some days it's really good to go to meetings. But the going to meetings, as you know, at least at Boston Children, going across the campus, you know, there's 15-minute gaps on front to back going from building to building.
Right. Well, sometimes the walk is nice, right? It clears your
head. Yeah, it is. No, that's so true.
Yeah.
That's
so true. The social interaction is nice too, but it's also nice to have the option and know that you can work from home, or, you know, and what we were talking about earlier is do other things at home, telemedicine. You don't have to drive to the doctor anymore. You don't have to drive to Boston to see a physician. And as you said, eventually you'll probably have to go in and see someone, but to do some of the initial discussions and initial preliminary diagnosis and things like that, you can probably do telemedicine.
Absolutely.
So this has been great. I mean, you guys are, you know, as you mentioned, you're the leader in all of this stuff. And it's great chatting with you. Tell me about, you know, maybe to end, like, how would you, what advice or thoughts would you give to other hospitals or other organizations about how they can be helping their community in this time and beyond?
Yeah, that's it's such a meta question and
sorry,
a difficult one to answer in that, you know, we're part of a huge ecosystem, you know, across the planet of healthcare. So we're not the end all be all, proud to be associated with and you know, boastfully on behalf of all the doctors and researchers, right, the best care and best research on the planet for pediatrics. But to give recommendations for others. So I'll channel our former CEO and our current CEO, and you mentioned it, you know, in the importance of understanding how children are our future and investing in it early to get lifelong dividends is one thing that, whether you're a public policymaker or a healthcare advocate or a parent, understanding if we can do that early rather than dealing with chronic disease, mm-hmm. You know, whether it's 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, even 100 these days, why not understand the early genesis, whether it's behavioral health, obesity, cancer, heart disease, the stuff that our researchers do in the labs and across pediatric labs. I'm awestruck by their dedication, and it's the type of thing that when you see it, you're just so impressed by how they go to work every day with a mission to discover hopefully something that can be life-changing. But they don't know that it's going to happen tomorrow, yet they're dedicated tomorrow like they will be 3 years from now. So it's hard to say how to advise other hospitals other than to understand that pediatrics plays a very special place in healthcare, that early investments can pay lifelong dividends. The understanding, like you asked at the top of the of our interview, that COVID initially was an adult, and it, by the data, it shows it was it affected adults much more than children. But understanding now, after we've been through more than a year of COVID, what are the implications? And some of it wasn't death because of the disease, it's the downstream effects like behavioral health.
Right.
And I think it'll be probably the better part of the next generation that we really truly understand through research what those causes were, what those effects were, and how do we mitigate them. That really, I'm privileged to be associated with all these people who do this research.
Right.
And to tell that story and the days they come to us and say, I have this paper, those are great days.
Right. Interesting. It's fascinating, you know, because we keep hearing about the disease, but of COVID, but you mentioned such an important piece, which is, and that you guys are all over, which is the implications of COVID on kids, on children. And that is the behavioral health piece. And that's what we're going to see more of. You know, everybody talks about how long, you know, and clearly that we know there's the after effects of COVID and the disease, but there's after effects of COVID and how it's been impacting our future and our kids. And I think that's something what I'm hearing is that's something we all need to be watching for.
Yes, absolutely. Understand it, hopefully grapple with it, hopefully invest in it, because like I said, the returns are lifelong, and what a better investment than in children who can become healthier adults.
Right. Roddy, you know, I do want to ask, because you hinted at it earlier, and it was the transition from Sandy, who just retired, right, in March.
That's right.
To Kevin recently, and that was a big transition. And I'm just curious kind of how that transition took place and how that's impacting Boston Children's Hospital.
So Sandy was decided to retire, announced it months ago. The end of April was her last day. We celebrated her with great fanfare and much love. Everybody was sad to see her go, but also very happy to have Kevin. He has been with us. Sandy was among the first female non-physician leaders at Harvard Teaching Hospital, and really trailblazed and did amazing work. We were in a financial state when she took the reins 8 years ago and righted the ship and positioned us for things like COVID, the technology. She invested in innovation technology. And now Kevin, among the first African-American leaders at a Harvard Teaching Hospitals. His father was among the first Black journalists at a Southern newspaper. He was at the Nashville, Tennessee, and his typewriter is at the African-American Museum in Washington, D.C., if you ever get down there. His two brothers are also physician leaders, one at Vanderbilt and another one at Yale New Haven. They're all accomplished, and this transition is one that I think, because Kevin has been here, there's not tumult, it's smooth. He just started and looking so forward to working with him. He understands the people here because he's been here, he trained here.
Right.
He understands our pillars. He has a vision for where we're going, and that's gonna unfold in the years to come. And it's a new chapter, but an exciting one.
Great, exciting times. That's great to hear.
Yes.
Well, Roddy, I really appreciate your time talking with me today. More importantly, appreciate everything you and your colleagues do at Boston Children's Hospital to sum up even our conversation, for really taking care of our future. So thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you for sharing, and thanks for all you do. So take care,
thank
Roddy.
Thank you, Jeff. It's a pleasure. Right.
Thank you for listening to Brand Heart. We hope that today's episode inspired you to spread goodness and help those in need. If you know of a brand going above and beyond to help others, please share it with us via Twitter at @ShowBrandHeart. Brand Heart is a production of Small Army, a Finn Partners company. To learn more, visit smallarmy.net or finnpartners.com.